Welcome to Liberty Talk Canada. I am Odessa Orlowitz. Thank you so much for joining me today. Well, we have an interesting episode. I have two great guests. They're both pretty much experts in what the end agenda is with what just happened to Vancouver, British Columbia. And it was pretty sleazy the way the outgoing mayor, who was not voted back in, signed us up for this, and I don't know what Ken Sims is going to do about it. I'm going to talk to these guys about it. But I have Joshua, who's here with Indigenous point of view as to what's happening with the land going back to the First Nations. And I've also got Ron Valant. He's an expert. He's been studying this for so long, what the final goal is. And interestingly enough, timing is everything. My last episode, I spoke all about how the UN, which is the end goal of the New World Order, how the UN is convincing and paying off all of our provinces and our cities and our local councillors to do this agenda based on something that seems so wonderful and so great and so fair. But as Joshua will let you know, unfortunately, they're not just fooling us, but they're actually fooling the First Nations. And this is a long-term goal. You may not even see it in our lifetime, what the end goal result will be. You may possibly, but I'm going to let Joshua explain that more to you, what's just happened to Vancouver. First, I'm going to quickly do my ad. What is the body's most important nutrient? By volume, the average body is 62% hydrogen, 24% oxygen, 12% carbon, and 2% everything else. Health science is concentrated on minerals and vitamins, but those are part of only your 2%. When considering proteins and carbs, they miss the importance of hydrogen, how we normally get it, and its role in your body. Hydrogen is the building block of life, and it's involved in virtually every chemical process in your body. Without sufficient hydrogen, the body starts shutting down systems that aren't immediately life-threatening to preserve hydrogen and life. First, the regeneration system shut down. You age quicker and heal slowly. Then the immune system shut down. You get sick easier. And finally, organs start to fail. Science is proving that chronic lack of hydrogen causes or exacerbates nearly every ailment known to man. How do we normally get our hydrogen? Why is our body so low in hydrogen? And it's to do with the ways they've been farming our food and all the junk we're eating. It's causing havoc in our body, and it's causing us to be low in hydrogen, which is not good. You can also feel it in your health that something's not right, and these machines can bring you back to optimal health. What is Brown's gas? What do the Chinese and Japanese know that we don't know with all their hydrogen bars? Learn more about this at eagle-research.life, eagle-research.life. And if you do decide to buy the AquaCure AC50, put Liberty spelt normally to get a discount of 20% off the retail price, and it's a one-year money-back guarantee. Also, don't forget, in the description, this is where all of the links are to go to my sponsors. Consider getting you and your family a tower garden. If you want to have control over what's being sprayed and not sprayed on your leafy green vegetables and tomatoes, considering getting yourself a tower garden and your own seeds so that you can be in charge of your health and not having geoengineering garbage being sprayed. That leads me to my next episode, which I'm going to be taking a while to work on. I will be exposing the American military document that by 2025, they will own the weather. It talks about all the awful things for our health that they're spraying in the air. They admit it in these documents, and it's causing all sorts of disease, as well as the pneumonia type disease that they'll just attribute to COVID as usual. So anyways, thank you for tuning in. All of the ways that you can help out are down below. If you'd like to donate to the hard work I'm doing, buy me a coffee. I appreciate it. So I'm going to bring on these two amazing guys, and we're going to read out the mainstream news article about what just happened. And then Ron and Joshua are going to actually tell us what this really means. So come on out. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Ron, you're muted.
Not anymore.
So it's nice to have you guys back. I've had each of you on my show like twice, I think. But it's been a long time. And now that everything you warned us about just came true for Vancouver,
Well, that's the thing, you know, I mean, it's been this whole UNDRIP issue. It's been really hard to convince the average person that this is actually a real thing because it's too big and too monstrous, really. And, you know, there has been some documentation of what's actually been happening. But now with what we're going to be talking about, everyone can put their eyes to it and they can actually realize this is really happening.
Mm-hmm. Also that it's been in 2019, British Columbia already ratified UNDRIP and, of course, Bill C-15, which is the federal initiative. And now it's more of a verification that Vancouver is doing what they're doing, which is really dangerous for everybody concerned. And I'm so glad that Ron and I could be on to be able to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ron sent me this saying, oh God, did you see this? They've done it. And I immediately said, I need you both on. I don't want to tackle this myself. Okay, if you guys can mute, and then if you want to interject, unmute. I'm just going to show the mainstream news article. Can you guys see it? If one of you can unmute and let me know if you can see it.
Yeah.
Okay. So Vancouver Sun, Dan Fumano, after debate, outgoing Vancouver Council approves groundbreaking UNDRIP strategy. With Vancouver's UNDRIP strategy approved, outgoing Mayor Kennedy Stewart said he looks forward to seeing how the city's next council will handle key decisions. Now, I'm going to ask you guys what you think, but I don't know if Ken Sim, our incoming mayor, who's already trying to clean up the liberal mess they made of downtown East Side with the tent city. He's already seeing that where's the money gone? The $1 million a day, getting to the bottom of what's this money been spent on? So he's going to change how things are down there. Thank God he won. Okay. So in the final public meeting of its 4-year term, can't believe they did this in the last week. When a fairly conservative mayor is coming on board, it's like they didn't want to let him make the decision. This was the sleaziest move, but I expect it from Kennedy. Vancouver City Council approved a strategy Tuesday for implementing the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was hailed as the first of its kind in Canada, if not the world. The strategy was produced by a task force, which you guys can click on the link. I'll put this stuff in the description at Liberty. Created last year by Vancouver Council in partnership with leadership of the Musqueam, Squamish, and shoot, I don't know how to pronounce this. So, Josh, how do you say it? The swell of, how do you say it, guys?
Something. Let's see, what is it?
It's, think of a sleigh.
Okay.
Tsleil-Waututh.
Okay.
So Tsleil-Waututh.
Okay. The Tsleil-Waututh Nations to develop recommendations for the implementation of UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, or UNDRIP. Sounds great, right? Well, we'll see. UNDRIP was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 2007, establishing, among other things, minimum standards for the survival, dignity, and well-being of the Indigenous peoples of the world. In 2019, the BC government passed legislation to implement UNDRIP, as did the Canadian government in 2021. And Ron Valant has been screaming about this. Don't believe what they're saying. The ultimate agenda is very bad for everybody. Vancouver's UNDRIP strategy has been hailed as the first such framework created by the municipality in partnership with First Nations. It recognizes the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, sorry, as the land's original caretakers and seeks to address historical and ongoing injustices and inequities faced by Indigenous people. A city statement described the strategy as groundbreaking. Hey, Josh, can you just mute because your cricket's in the background? But do interject, guys, if you want to add anything. I know we're going to talk about it after. Vancouver's strategy includes 79 calls to action, which include combating Indigenous-specific racism, prioritizing First Nation-led affordable housing developments, formalizing protocols between the City of Vancouver government and First Nations on hosting major international events, and economic measures such as revenue sharing agreements. The recommendations encompass several city departments, including schools, city planning, libraries, engineering, and police. With the strategy approval, council directed city staff to determine what work will be needed to implement each action and report back on next steps. Speaking after Tuesday's vote, Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart said he was glad the UNDRIP strategy decision came in the final meeting of his four-year term. Why didn't he make it during his term? I don't know. Instead of ending up on one of the first agendas of the incoming mayor and council, who will be sworn in next month. Building relationships with local First Nations and their leadership has been one of the richest parts of his experience in municipal government, said Stewart, who ran for re-election in this month's civic election but finished second in the October 15 election to Mayor-elect Ken Sim of ABC Vancouver. That is because Stewart has destroyed Vancouver. With the strategy approved, Stewart said some big, difficult decisions about its actual implementation, including tricky issues like tax revenue and real estate, will fall to Vancouver's next council.
That's a tricky issue, you know, like who's going to own the real estate and who's going to be paying who? Oh, man.
Well, it's my goal, well, I'm going to do it, to send Mayor Ken Sim all the videos showing what the end goal is, just in case he doesn't know.
Right, you know? Yeah. And one thing that if people are not, you know, familiar with UNDRIP, Article 26, that states that the Indigenous and the, you have to understand that UNDRIP itself, the document, does not state what Indigenous is. And it was written by the so-called experts on Indigenous affairs, and it took them 20 years to write it, but they left out Indigenous, and that's for a reason. But anyhow, it says that the Indigenous have the rights to, that's important, the rights to the lands, territories, and resources to which they have traditionally owned, occupied, or otherwise used. And so this is what this whole deal is about. So basically all the land under Vancouver now has new owners.
Okay, can I just, and I'll finish because we talk about how Colleen Hardwick, which is who I voted for, was very uncomfortable with this because she's a little bit more awake. But Ron, I know it used to not say who was considered Indigenous, but somewhere in the article that you highlighted, they gave three different types of Indigenous.
Yeah, that's actually the Canadian Charter 35-2.
Okay.
And so in Bill C-15 that passed last year to make all Canadian law consistent with UNDRIP, they identify the Indigenous as being 35-2 of the Canadian Charter. So they give their own definition of what Indigenous is, which is the Indian, the Inuit, and the Métis, right? And right now, all across Canada, every square inch is being claimed. And right now, we're going to see the canary in the coal mine with Vancouver, with what we're going to read here. This is going to go everywhere, every city, every town, every jurisdiction.
One of the reasons why BC is so front and center with this whole thing is just because we truly have a lot of unceded territories, and ceding meaning that the government expressly says we're in unceded, unsurrendered territories because they're acknowledging the fact that it's not theirs. Unfortunately, with this whole UN agenda, with this being an UNDRIP, being UN-based, as UN becomes the banker, the group that holds the property. And I've been watching over the last 2 years on a lot of reserves, they're having new offices. They're building connections with the Indigenous. And unfortunately, when you look at the Vancouver strategy, the people named from the different reserves are people who are, you know, the way I see it, most of the reserves are federally owned, federally operated, and federally funded. So this is not just dealing with the Indigenous, it's dealing with another arm of the federal government in a sense. So it becomes very dangerous for all the Indigenous, all the regular community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me finish this and we'll talk about what the true agenda is. So this is what gives me hope. Maybe Ken Sim can at least stall this for, I believe his term is 4 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. So this says it's one thing to say you support reconciliation, but it's another to champion it, Stewart said. So I don't know if Ken Sim can just say no for 4 years, or I don't know. Will the next mayor and council champion reconciliation? Some of the recommendations here are tax forgiveness, land return, joint governance, and those are big steps. Will they take those, or will it sit fallow? There's a lot in this document that's extremely challenging, but could herald a true reconciliation. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Where does this sit on the agenda of the next council? And if Ken Sim, in my opinion, is awake to there's another agenda going on here, I'm sure the news will spend the next 4 years, if that's how long the term is, just slagging him and slagging him and slagging him, probably calling him racist, who knows. So the three incumbent ABC councillors, Rebecca Bly, Lisa Dominato, and Sarah Kirby-Young, all voted Tuesday to support all parts of the motion and spoke about its importance. Well, Sarah Kirby-Young was very, very big in the decision to mask everybody and everything in Vancouver. I find her to be a horrible person. Anyways, and early indications are that the rest of the incoming ABC majority government is supportive too. Karim Alam, the co-chair of ABC's transition team, told Post Media News reporter Glenda Loimes last week that reconciliation was an ABC priority and the party supported the UNDRIP strategy. Strategy is exactly what it is. People just don't understand it. Support was almost unanimous, but the woman I voted for, team councillor Colleen Hardwick, was the sole councillor to raise concerns about the strategy. Hardwick, who ran for mayor this year and finished third, is one of five council members who will not be around next term, along with Stewart, COPE Council, John Swanson, Green Council Michael Weeb, and NPA Council Melissa DeGenova. In her closing comments before the final vote on UNDRIP strategy, Hardwick said that while she wanted to express strong support for reconciliation in principle, she had several concerns about the report before council. So this woman's smart. She knows what's going on. Special treatment on the basis of need is right and proper, she said. Pardon?
Yeah. That's very important, that whole issue. That would fly by most people there, because this is where it's going. It's going to be special treatment on the basis of need. I did a video. I edited down a 90-minute video talking about this, and it's called The Most Important Video That You'll See About Your Future. It's on my YouTube channel, Ron Valent. And there's two versions. The 8-minute version is the one you want to watch. It's fast, and it covers what's going on. And basically, it's going to be, there it is there. That's the one. And so basically, it's where we're going in the future is that if a person has need, that he'll be able to take it from the riches of the other. And this is a stepping stone that we're on. And this whole thing that we're talking about here with UNDRIP in Vancouver and returning land and everything else, it all has to do with basically destroying private land rights. And then the next thing is going to be private property rights. So they can bring us into that you'll own nothing and be happy, right? It's
Okay.
Check that out. Very important video.
And then we want to talk to Josh about how they're pulling the wool over Indigenous eyes, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, I just want to mention, a lot of people talk to me about how did they get duped with COVID, and this does tie into the whole UNDRIP scenario. Is when COVID started, prior to that, 2 years before COVID hit, is they had nurses, all the reserves were given health nurses that were connected with First Nations health, and they became trusted because they gave shots, they took out corns, they helped the Indigenous community. So they became very dependent on these nurses and trusted them, men or women. And then when the lockdowns came, they believed everything that they were told. When it comes to UNDRIP, there's agreements, I am sure, being made with the different reserves. But here's the huge thing. If, let's say, the UN was the banker, which is sort of my way of looking at it, and they have agreements, like in Vancouver, they're in the agreement, you'll notice that they have they're going to have working relationships with almost every facet of Vancouver life. That includes, services, road services, almost every part of what Vancouver does, they're trying to have a working relationship. To be honest, I don't know one reserve that has the infrastructure to be able to handle any of those things, which becomes a big dilemma.
So, Joshua, you told me this last show that the UN is banking on the knowledge that the First Nations really don't have the infrastructure set up in time to do this. You can talk about the numerous reasons if you want. And that their final goal is knowing that the UN will have to come back in and manage it, correct?
Yeah. I look at it like a corporation. It's like the UN comes, they hold, they're the bank. When they give the lands over, it means that you no longer own your property. You don't, it goes into the name of the reserve in their traditional territory that's been mapped out. So let's say Stola would take over Chilliwack and certain areas would be under their auspices. They would be taking over that. And the way that the agreement in Vancouver is written, they will have a working relationship, and sooner there will be a point where it will be all under, Burrard or Tsleil-Waututh or the other reserve, which is really dangerous because if they go into default, if they can't do their job, the UN can walk in and say, okay, you're into default. Like a corporation, they have people waiting, like creditors. And one of the largest ones would be the CCP because the land masses that they have purchased. There's all kinds of scenarios that scare the bejesus out of me. I mean, technically, as an Indigenous man, I think it would be great for the return of our lands, in my heart, because they were taken just as an Indigenous man. But what's happening here has nothing to do with an honorable
transaction
or treaty. The whole thing about truth and reconciliation bothers me, because in international law, you cannot, the perpetrator can't be involved in the reconciliation scenario. So there's all kinds of things, but I do, honestly, I've listened to many of Ron's stuff, and he's really right on the money when it comes to a general perspective of what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. And it's dangerous because literally everything can be taken from anybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're using the Indigenous, as their front to be able to go ahead and do this operation.
And they don't have the infrastructure. They do not have the infrastructure. I know, because I work with many of the reserves, and if there are 10 people working there, 3 people are actually doing the work and being honest.
Yeah. And they're going to have say and control over almost everything, the leases and industry, who can run their industry. And we'll get into that, I guess.
And what's so dangerous about that is then those Indigenous groups, and I've been a part of this, they start hiring people that are recommended to them by the UN or by the top dogs. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it's monster.
So it's kind of like the government's taking back over land from people that bought it and have mortgages or not, but saying it's the Indigenous. But what you've said to me before, Josh, was they know they don't have the infrastructure to do it. How many years, if you had to guess, now we're not going to hold you to this, but because you're Indigenous and you work with a lot of Indigenous, you know what's going on. How many years do you think it will take if, let's say, this was all implemented today, for this to fail and the UN takes back over? 2030?
I would honestly, it would, if this was implemented, it would be less than 5 years when the UN would start to take over. They want to speed things up. And if a corporation, for instance, as remember that the reserves are seen as, these are not hereditary or traditional people. These are people that are bought and paid for by the federal government. Also, the federal government says this is our land. I mean, look what happened in, I think it was either Australia or New Zealand, where they literally said, this is our traditional lands. And they said, you're out of here just by the stroke of a pen.
Is this the one you were telling me about where you watched the UN come in? I thought it was Africa, but where you watched the UN come in, give the land back to their indigenous, and it just... they couldn't do it. They couldn't manage it. The whole thing blew up in their face, and the UN came and took their land, and now they're the owners, correct?
Yes, they have. There's some tried and true scenarios. I have to look them up and can send you the links of the people that spoke about it and what happened. But the thing is, this is a tried and true method. When the ratification for the UN, it means the UN is the holder of the scenario. They're the holder of UNDRIP. They are the ones that will be managing it. Yeah. And if the people go into default, if the indigenous go into default, they will take over. And then the creditors will be lining up, which they're already set up to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it's, I don't know how they would come in and take over necessarily, because it's an entity outside of, you know, Canadian law, but it'll go through, I think, the political structure to, you know, because that's how it's being done right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's under this document that these guys created out of thin air. And now it's our politicians who are implementing it, right? Yeah. But one thing we need to know for sure is, like, in UNDRIP itself, it's the very last article, there's 46 articles. I recommend everyone read it and reread it, actually, because this is coming at your doorstep. But Article 46 states that nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as implying for any state, so that would be Canada or Alberta or BC or for Vancouver, I guess, even people or group or person, any right to engage in any activity or perform any act contrary to the Charter of the United Nations. So really, I've been yelling, you know, from the mountaintops that we're essentially under the UN Charter now. And, you know, even the lawyers who and, you know, experts on our charter and everything else, they say no. But basically, all Canadian law has to be in alignment with this document. And now we have to be, you know, can't go against the Charter of the United Nations.
I agree with you 100%. Also, that the whole UN scenario scares me, because it can happen very, very quickly. But remember, if there's no fuel, if there's no food, if there's such an extreme crash, I mean, look at the marketplace right now, what's happening with money. If everything disappears for us, and we are crunched with an economic crash of the magnitude that we feel is coming, they can act very quickly to save us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Ron, do you want me to pull up the epic, awesome notes that you made about the most important parts of this long agenda you pulled out and read them out and talk about?
Yeah, but I want to actually back up one step here, because the reason why this document is so important is that we can now show people this, and they can actually read it, and they can see that it's actually being implemented by politicians. And before that, the only thing that I really saw, and it was sent to me, as most of this information has been, but if you want to pull it up, it's the one that says British Columbians are in for a big adjustment with Aboriginal title settlement, lawyer says.
Is that the one you sent Norb?
This is the one I sent yesterday. It's part of that whole... note package. It's near the top, but basically this is back in 2021, March 2021. And I can just read it here. It says British Columbians are in for a big shock when ownership of large parts of the province switches from Crown to First Nations, says Aboriginal rights and title lawyer Jack Woodward. And so I was sharing this and whatnot, and people were seeing it, but that was really the first indication that, yeah, this is really happening. Cause a lot of people would say, no, it's just political posturing by the government. They'll never do something like that. But yeah, so that's happened.
It's, to me, it's not posturing whatsoever. If you think about even the word indigenous or the word people in the UN never had, doesn't have a definition because they consider us serfs. Many years ago, as you know, with the Canadian history, we had all our traditional lands, and then they took the indigenous people and they all threw them into small reserves. There's no difference of what's happening right now. And my warning has been to the regular community that they're going to take you. They're going to take these lands and push you into rural areas, not rural areas, from rural areas. Yeah. And I drove by Saskatoon several months ago when I was speaking across Canada, and there was more houses being built in the middle of Saskatoon. I talked to one of the foremen, and he says, we're building more than what they have availability for. But if, you know, and Bill Gates owns a lot of the farmland in that area, if they get pushed into smaller areas, UNDRIP would be the perfect scenario by which this would take place.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Can you see this? Do you guys see the document here? UNDRIP bill becomes law. Well, so tell me about this. After it fails federally, now I don't know anything about that. Is that, when did that fail, and why did it fail, and how come we're doing it and they're not?
Okay, yeah, well, yeah. See, this actually is talking about when BC implemented UNDRIP. It was 3 days after the federal election in 2019. Okay, and I had posted a video a few months or a couple of months before that, you know, warning about UNDRIP. Yeah. And what was happening is there was a private members bill that was in play at that time, and it got killed with the election. So with the federal election, everything, any bills that haven't been ratified or whatever are killed off.
Right.
And whenever you'd hear about UNDRIP, it was all this nice fluffy wuffy, you know, we're going to have reconciliation, everyone's going to be happy. But no one would tell you the implications of it. So that's why I gave, that was just a kind of a backstory to that. So then what happened was BC adopted it with John Horgan and his crew. And so and I know that there was people working on that UNDRIP document for years, and they were given a gag order. All of this is done behind the scenes, and no one knows about it, right? And so all of a sudden, 3 days after the federal election, it just pops up, we're going to do this UNDRIP thing, and no one knows what it is. And then so what happened after that was in the throne speech federally, they had a one-liner, and they said that we're going to reintroduce UNDRIP. And that's when I gave the, you know, a video talking about it, and it got 50,000 views, and people were starting to understand. And then so we tried fighting it actually last year. And they fast-tracked the whole process, and now Bill C-15, if you go or look for the first reading, you'll see what it is. But basically, all Canadian law has to be in alignment with UNDRIP, and that has passed now. So this is all going on behind the scenes.
It's like treason.
It is, yeah. It's an absolute kill shot. Now, this is interesting here because this ties into caribou recovery, and 2 million acres of land in northern BC has been dedicated to, you know, a few thousand caribou, and I broke that story too with UNDRIP at the same time. And it says here, this is between West Moberly, Saulteaux Nations, and BC and Canada. But anyhow, it says here, whereas British Columbia and Canada are committed to fully adopting and implementing the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the Calls to Actions and Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. And it says purpose there below. It says the purpose of the partnership agreement is.
All right, sorry, Ron, where are you so I can show the right page?
I think you were on there. Let's see. Right there.
Purpose. Oh,
okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, sorry. In order for me to read it, I have to block what I can see from you guys.
Okay.
But anyhow, the purpose, the whole purpose of this partnership agreement for caribou recovery, and this is across all the north of Canadian provinces, is stabilizing and growing the population of the central group to levels that are self-sustaining and support traditional Aboriginal harvesting activities consistent with existing Aboriginal treaty rights. So really all of this is just a con to be able to do a massive land grab all across Canada for these caribou. And the whole premise is that they have to protect this habitat. But the habitat is not the problem that's killing the caribou. It's a whole host of other things. Mm-hmm. So now what's happened is, like, in that election, the 2019 election, when I ran for the PPC, I warned the PPC head office, and they said there's a fellow in Northern Quebec who's running, and he says they're doing the same thing in Northern Quebec and 10,000 jobs would be lost.
So, and Ron, they just did this in Alberta. Chrystia Freeland came in and said they're going to wild a whole bunch of areas there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to affect a lot of the oil and gas industry. And it's just a con to be able to shut down industry, to shut down our systems. The small little towns in northern BC there, they rely on that. That's, you know, the forest and the industry and the mining and everything else. But if that all gets shut down on account of, you know, there are a few thousand caribou, you know, it's just a play, right?
Well, the grand scheme of things, and you guys all know this, but the grand scheme of things, and I've watched and read documents about this, is we've purposely been indebted to the central bankers, to the Club of Rome, the central bankers, the big, big guys. And so they're coming back to get their land, and they're doing it through the UN. They own everything. And Trudeau has just been purposely just giving away our money, putting us more in debt so that we have to do this. He's part of the 2030 agenda. And so because everyone's been borrowing from these big guys that are not good guys, they're coming back for their land, but they're just not admitting it. So they're doing it through our desperation, our politicians, and the fact that they can cut us off. I mean, we're in war right now, but just people don't know.
Yeah, it is war. And it's not just the land. It's going to be everything. I mean, why it's so important to be out of debt. If the system crashes and then you're in debt and they say, okay, pay up.
What you're saying is 100% true, Ron. No matter where I speak, I always talk about UNDRIP. People don't realize the dangers that are actually happening. And I usually say this is a part of the toolkit that the UN and the globalists are using, but it's something that they are setting in play. The dangers of losing everything. Last week I was at a dairy farm. They're ready. Their neighbors shut down. They have created so many situations that it's making it virtually impossible for farming and other things. Now, this plays into everything that they're trying to do. Now, remember also, we're coming very close to a crash, and people cannot pay their mortgages, and they can come and say, look, you know, now it's part of Indigenous territory. You don't have to worry about this and that, but everything will, in the end, gets taken away, everything. And you no longer own your land. I mean, in the Indigenous point of view, it's always been, we should be stewards of our land and let the Creator own it so we can work together. But, you know, it's about giving it back to the Indigenous federally owned coffers, and then the UN takes over, and we're hooped. All of us are hooped. We'll all be moved, even the reserves, because they are now taken over by the UN, will be pushed into the cities.
Question. Okay, so this happens, and let's say you live in False Creek or wherever. I don't know if it's everywhere. I have a townhouse close to Burnaby on the river. And it was Crown land. I didn't pay for a lease to lease it off the First Nations. But so you put in your report there, Ron, if we show it again, an example of what happened to somebody, was it New Zealand or whatever, where they get a letter and they're told your property may be important. Does that mean that the entire mortgage you've paid, the portion of the house you own, you just walk away from, or will the Indigenous buy it from us if they want it back?
No, there's no buyout.
No,
there's no buyout.
No, There was, I think it's by Soyuz, there was, or Oliver, somewhere in that area, where people had leased land from the band, actually, and they went and built their expensive houses on there. And then they said, no, we're not going to renew your lease. And that's it. They have the properties. Yeah. So it's very problematic. But yeah, that happened in New Zealand, because that's one of the videos I wanted to talk about. I forgot. And that is, if you go on my YouTube channel, it's a guy, his channel is called Crossing the Rubicon. And he was in New Zealand. He got absolutely destroyed. He actually posted a video recently, because he said, my life has been destroyed, you know, by rolling this out and letting people know. And almost a year ago, he warned about UNDRIP in New Zealand, and they demonized him in the media, calling him racist and everything else. And then he lost his job on account of it, and lost his marriage. That's what's happened with the Maori people there. Basically, they've claimed, I think it's 1,500 people are involved. They claimed and there wasn't indigenous land, as far as, you know, it's just basically regular land that people paid for. But now they've said that is basically our cultural land that we had practices on, and they're told to leave. You know, they got, you know, letters stating that they're on, you know, indigenous land, and some of them are saying it's okay, you can just stay on your land, it's not a big deal. But when that happens, I mean, you got to fight it, because you just don't want to just go ahead and capitulate to it, because, you know, and we can talk about that later, I guess. But that happened in New Zealand. Yes, indeed.
Okay, so here's my question. So if I own a townhouse along the river, which I do, we rent it out because it's way too far from my kids' school. So now we just rent near the school. Anyways, so let's say the First Nations are like, no, we don't want the land, we just want to get the money from your mortgage. Is that what they mean by they'll do it in tandem with the government, where all of a sudden my mortgage is being paid to a different entity?
No, it doesn't have to do with your mortgage. It has to do with land. They're claiming the land. Okay. And actually, on page 7 of the document, do you have a picture of the document itself in that? Can you show that?
The long one?
Yeah, just the title of it. Vancouver, City of Vancouver's UNDRIP strategy. It's just a picture I sent.
When you're looking for it, also realize that what happens when you can't pay your mortgages, when there's a scenario, they're setting things up that it's going to be very hard for people to survive. So a lot of people, and the whole strategy about you will own nothing and be happy. You'll be grateful that, oh my God, I don't have to pay the mortgage anymore. They've got things set up to convince people that this is the best way.
Right. Yeah, it will be. That's exactly. Well, anyhow, on page 7 of this Vancouver, have you guys posted a link someplace so that people can go and click on it and download it?
Okay.
That would be good.
Okay. So no, after this show, we take this off Facebook and I upload to liberty.com/Odessa, and all the links you want me to put will be there, Ron.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, well, anyhow.
Hold on. This is the document you gave me. And then there's just the long one that I didn't bother to pull up because I didn't think you were going to read from it.
Yeah. Well, that's the one that Joshua sent me.
It's funny. Okay. But you've highlighted stuff here. So where do you want me to go, Ron, with this?
I'm just reading from page 7 here. Yeah, you can go to page 7. It says here, June 24th, 2014.
Okay, I can't see numbers. Tell me when to stop.
Okay, sorry. Okay, oh, yeah, way below that. Yeah, go. Okay, that's okay. Right there, that is actual the title of the document. Okay, sure. So go down. Okay, that's the thing about New Zealand. Okay, mm-hmm.
Page 14. Do I need to go back?
Oh, we're at page 14. Okay. I don't know now. Okay. Okay. What it is, those are my notes. Okay. What you've got showing there are my notes, but then there's also the actual document that I sent that was all highlighted.
So yeah, it's a separate document.
Okay. Yeah. Let me find it here. Okay, but just keep talking.
I'll read page 7 there. It's at the bottom of your, okay.
Can you guys see my Gmail now?
Yeah. Let's see who sent you what.
Oh my God. Okay. I shouldn't be doing it like this. Okay. There's two here. Okay. Undrip Vancouver. Show Word doc and then link tomorrow. Show notes. This must be it. You only sent me two.
Yeah. No, that's
the same thing.
Yeah. Actually, what I did in there is just below, go back to the document that you had originally.
Okay. I just want to see if there's one more. Oh, here. This link.
No.
Okay.
Boy, am I getting in trouble? All this private stuff being shown.
I know. I don't even know what I just showed. Hopefully. Okay.
It's anyhow the show notes. That's the one. Okay. Right there. Okay.
Yeah. No, so, this is the show notes.
Okay. So basically I had given you the PDF in there of the,
well, it might be at the bottom.
I don't think it was at the bottom, but you can try.
Okay. Let's just go through your notes. I thought
it was higher up. Sorry about that.
You sent me two things and I noticed that it was the same thing twice. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, okay. No, it's within this here that I sent you. Okay. Just keep on scrolling down. Yeah. I sent you a PDF of the Vancouver strategy plan. And actually,
hey guys, can you hear me? Cause I've got it pulled up here. If I can share screen.
Oh, okay. Now he comes. I'm like, where's producer? But also
I've been working on finding it.
Actually, you know what it is? It's that cover. It's that go down further. And if you click on it, that should be it. Like, okay, go down. Or you can't probably, he's probably overriding your system.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So basically,
okay, I'll show it.
Yeah. You know what it was? It was that, remember I said this is the title of the plan. That's the PDF. So you click on that and it'll open up.
So Norb's doing it, right?
Yeah, you guys see it?
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Before you get into that, Ron, when it says tax forgiveness, what does that mean?
That could mean, you know, if the Indigenous are behind in their taxes, you know, on their property, that they might have tax forgiveness. That's all I can think of.
Okay, nothing to do with us.
I don't think so, no. Yeah, scroll down. Now, this is interesting. Well, like in the very beginning, it talks about who are the people who actually did this. Okay, that's recommend. Okay, scroll down. Yeah. It actually has page numbers on the bottom of each page. Where is that? 4? Yeah. So, yeah.
Go to
in the
7.
Very beginning, it talks about all the people who are involved in doing this. So that's important to note, which counselors, you know, and the people involved. That's all within here. But we can pass that. Go to page 7. And the point I want to make with that is... it says on June 24th, 2014, City Council voted unanimously that the city is on the unceded territory, the Musqueam, Squamish, and the peoples, and are the stewards of the land under Vancouver. Okay. So this is what the city did. You know, that should have been front page news of something that dramatic happening, but it's all done quietly, right? And, so that's the premise. So the whole premise is that that's their land, okay? And now everything is built upon that whole process, right?
Question for Joshua. Josh, are there other First Nations that realize this might be a scam? Are you the only one?
I have some friends that are very close to this that are chiefs that do know what's happening. In April, there was supposed to be a big decision made by Parliament, and I was on the chief's call where everybody from Judy Raybould to all the chiefs that I have known or heard of were there waiting for the government to connect with them. And like what's happening with the Indigenous communities is they are left high and dry. They're not told anything till a decision is made in parliament or in the provincial government, and then they're informed. Outside of the people that are signatories, like as you'll see in this document, there's signatories from Tsleil-Waututh with Berard and another band, but they're already organized people that are connected to the whole UNDRIP scenario. So all the people that are hired, all the people that are working with them, and with the indigenous nations, they'll be hiring people that are specifically trained and ready to work with them concerning the whole UNDRIP scenario. So it's a very dangerous thing. And honestly, I've been screaming about this for over a year, because this is one of the biggest ways of taking everything from everybody.
Including First Nations. They'll boot them off and put them in.
Of course. Do you think they care about the First Nations? No. You know, or they would have given us a definition what Indigenous is, which also works in a weird kind of way in our favor for all the people.
Well, that's the thing is, because Indigenous means born of the land. And in the UNDRIP document, it talks about how the Indigenous can go across borders, so that all the people that they're flooding Canada with, like I bet you, the Chinese people, as an example, in Vancouver, they would be considered Indigenous because, you know, China has been Chinese forever, right? And so they're Indigenous too. And so all these people, you know, can go ahead and claim all of these rights too.
Well, there are groups that are working very hard in trying to unify the Indigenous and non-Indigenous to be able to, they've called it stuff like, you know, a de jure government, to trying to make sure that there are sovereign autonomous zones that can be put together to be able to have a place for people to go if, for instance, things are go otherworldly. Like, you know, I just feel things are going to go really bad, and we have to be prepared for those scenarios as a people. That's why BC is so hard hit, is because there's only three tribes, I think, that ever ended up having an agreement with the government. Outside of that, everything is unceded territory, which means it's fair game, especially for the UN.
Yeah, you know, like all of this, when you look at, okay, in page 9, the very first paragraph.
Norb, can you bring up page 9?
Okay, I can't see that. Okay, so I mean, basically, it talks about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. All of this is just, you know, different entities to bring us to an end game. Calls to action and the missing and murdered Indigenous women, which they called an imperialistic genocide, by the way. The girls' calls for justice. Call on all levels of government to implement and comply with the United Nations declarations of the rights of Indigenous peoples. So all of these different kind of things that they got pushing is all towards having this United Nations declarations of the rights of Indigenous peoples. It's such a monster thing that's their end goal here. So.
Also, you have to realize that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was illegal under international law. I mentioned that you cannot be a perpetrator and work with a Truth and Reconciliation scenario. Also, a lot of the groups that are being commissioned to work with the Indigenous communities are very liberal, paid for by UN initiative. So it falls into place. It totally marries with their whole agenda.
Yeah. Just going down on that page, the second paragraph there on page 9 says the three bands are the original stewards and rights and title holders of their prospective unceded territories. So they're saying that they have the title, they're title holders. Now, I don't know how they're holding a title and how that works. But basically, that's the whole premise. Yeah. So
the danger about title holder, especially when it deals with crown, so-called crown land, the queen, when she passed, had to acknowledge all her territories and what she actually owned. She has to bring those things before the king because it shows how much she is worth, so that she doesn't, that the king doesn't have to pay taxes. That included all of New Zealand, that included Australia, the UK, and Canada. So when that, it's a huge, huge thing that we're dealing with. And if they're working in concert with a UN agenda, those lands, technically, the crown lands should be like what they called in the UK common land, which is supposed to be the people's land. But that's not the story that we're given.
You know, the whole problem with this whole idea and this concept, you know, like, let's go ahead and revert the land back to the indigenous, is how, you know, like, all throughout history, there's always, you know, war, conquest, you know, and different things along those lines. How can you go back and peel back the onion? You know, like, I mean, how can you go back in time and after, like, in this situation, we're talking a few hundred years of people coming into Canada, and then all of this infrastructure being built up and whatnot, and people paying big dollars for their land, you know, or the properties in Vancouver, you know, $1 million buys you a shack. And then to go back and say, well, no, we're just going to upend the whole thing. You can't do that. You have to basically go from where we're at now, where we've all been born into this system. We don't like it. But, you know, moving forward, we have to move forward in a way that, you know, doesn't upend the whole thing. And because really this could lead to civil war in Canada. And I think this is another angle, because when people realize what's really going on and the indigenous, you know, are being used as their proxy to do this, you know, maybe there might be, you know, civil war against the indigenous. And then if that happens, you know, they're different commissions that they've had talking about a colonial genocide will be true. And then the UN can come in, you know, and say, well, we got a genocide going on here in Canada, and we're taking over now.
I have to agree with you, Ron, because I've spoken at places and I've been literally attacked by awake people concerning being indigenous, and that I'm trying to, you know, take over. They're already starting to feel it. Some people who are listening and reading about UNDRIP don't realize that this is a federal initiative or government initiative. I know that there's going to be a hate on for the indigenous, easy. And that it's easy for colonial types, let's call it that, who have not separated themselves from colonial thinking. I really believe if we separate ourselves from the system that we have been brainwashed in, we'll start to be able to see something that might work. I mean, when people own land and they are still allowed to farm, but it is that they're stewards to that land. That's how we started. The indigenous always felt that we were stewards of the land, that we had to keep it healthy for fishing, for hunting, for the next seven generations. We didn't own it, but we were stewards of it. We were supposed to take care of it. And now we're fleshing out a UN initiative that it will all be controlled by the UN worldwide. That's what they're trying. The big thing that hurts me is they're going to take tracks for hunting, or you can't go here because there's a special lake or special water or springs, sure. and they'll you know, say this is sacred territory, and then they'll push everybody out into the cities.
Yeah, it's called wilding, and Rosa Quarry told us about wilding. And it is already starting. Okay, I have one more question on a shallow, low level, because I know some people in Vancouver are wondering this. Okay, so now they don't want the First Nations, they're looking at our townhouses and saying, well, you guys can stay there. We don't want to take the land back and do anything special with it. Do I now start paying a lease to First Nations and I don't own my house. So when I want to leave, it's just like rent now, and I leave and I have nothing.
I think having spoken to a few people that are in the banking industry is that if you still have to pay your mortgage, it'll still go to the same account, but it will be part of the First Nations account that it goes into for the nation that has oversees that plot of land. I don't think most of this is possible because they don't have the infrastructure, and there's going to be such pushback from the people who own land because it'll confuse them. They won't understand. But a lot of people are going to be given offers, as they have been speaking about worldwide, from Australia, even the States, that you'll be given an offer for your land, and it'll probably be less than cost, especially if it's big, and you have to relinquish because you can't pay your bills. Next week, there might be a crash where you can't make those payments, so they'll just take it from you, and you'll be happy.
Yeah, be happy. Actually, if Norm can pull up page 21 of the strategy plan, this fantastic thing that the Vancouver has brought upon the people. It says revenue sharing.
And I just want to say, while you're looking for that, don't tune out if you don't live in BC, Vancouver, Canada. They're coming. They're doing this to the States. They're coming for the whole world.
Exactly. I totally agree.
We in BC have this crazy group of liberals. We were the first one to do SOGI. We've just been taken over here. So we're just the first ones, and we're showing you guys you're next.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, actually, Norm, that's just basically UNDRIP itself there. I'm talking about the...
Your notes?
No, what is this? Okay, so just scroll up. That might be UNDRIP below the whole thing. Okay, there's a task force there. Okay, go down. How come it's not showing? Okay, there. Okay, I see that. Scroll down to page 21, or you just hit page 21. See, the thing is that I tell people about this thing with Vancouver, and they say, oh, Vancouver can go and, you know, slide into the ocean, you know, or we'll watch them, you know, as they deal with this. But this is worldwide, basically. And I don't think this is the document.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because that's page 21. So, yeah, we might have a
different one. Yeah, that's just
okay, 100%. Hold on, Ron. Is it your show notes? Because I can go back to that.
No, it's not my show notes. It's basically the actual document of the strategic plan. Go to the very top and show the strategic plan header. Is that a PDF? Can you click on that?
Yeah, this is the whole PDF file. This is the update report. So I'm not sure that this is the plan. This is an update.
Oh, the update report. Okay, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, so it's above that.
No, there's nothing.
Oh, okay. All right. So
do you just do it from memory?
Yeah, well, I can read it to you, actually.
You just do it.
I have it all pulled up on my computer. But okay. Basically, this is on page 21, okay? And I'll read this to you. It's talking about revenue sharing. It says, over time, the city of Vancouver has generated enormous wealth from unceded lands, and it has expropriated lands and has not compensated the rights and title holders. So that would be the three bands. Recognizing Vancouver as unceded Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh lands means addressing the inequities and loss created by land and resource disposition. There are domestic and international examples and precedences of revenue sharing agreements between governments and Indigenous peoples that can inform this work. So the very first one it talks about is identify options for revenue sharing through property taxes. And I think that's where you're going to see it first. Example, by sharing a portion of the existing new property taxes to distribute to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tusi nations. Okay. And then below that, three states that identify other options for revenue sharing, including but not limited to levies, fees, taxes, in a fair and equitable manner, they call it. They talk about creating revenue by special events, ensure city funds, ensure that the city funds these bands with capacity funding and personal support for any process the city wishes the nations to participate in, and prioritize employment for Indigenous people with developers, including establishing guidelines for developers to include train, employ Indigenous peoples in their projects. So it becomes a very comprehensive thing, actually.
Question. Would you tell someone who owns a home in Vancouver to sell right now before you get hooped?
Well, I mean, this is coming at us. It's going to be everywhere in Canada. So we're all in the same position. I think the way to deal with it is to fight it. If you end up having, they might not even say it on your taxes. They might just, you know, have it kind of hidden. But if they do show it as being a payment, you're paying property taxes to the different bands because you're on their property, then I would fight it, because in UNDRIP, it says that in Article 26, that the Indigenous have the rights to the lands, territories, and resources that they previously owned or used. And so it's saying that they have the rights to the land. It doesn't say that they have the land, but in this document here with the city of Vancouver, it's not having the rights to the land of these bands. They're saying that this is their land. So they're even going over and above what I see happening in UNDRIP itself. But anyhow, what I would do is I'd say, show to me that I am on their land. You know, what is it that, am I on their territory or their land? And because, you know, I'm living on the land, I have title to it, I'm here visibly, you can see me here, and I've used the land, right? And so that's where it's going to go into these court battles as to proving that it's their land.
So you have to pay for expensive lawyers.
You have to remember as well, is nobody has title to their land. I have many times gone over to somebody who has a mortgage, and I said, show me your car title, show me your home title, and they will bring me their vehicle, and it says certificate of registration. Also with their home, it says the exact same thing. It says certificate of registration. It's not a deed. It is not title. You don't have a title to your land. That's part of the system by which they've been running for so many years. So don't think that you actually have a deed or a title to your land. It doesn't exist.
Good point.
Now, is this all of BC eventually? Or is it just starting with Vancouver?
Well, this is Vancouver's strategic plan, and this is their document that they've created for Vancouver. And if I was in Vancouver and owned land, I would be reading this. But yeah, no, this is BC adopted UNDRIP in 2019 in October, and it's all been implemented. It's Campbell River Mirror article we read that there's new owners for the Crown land. That was well over a year ago, I think now. And it's all being done behind the scenes. All of these arrangements are being done, and it's going to pop up city after city. They're all working on it right now, but no one knows about it. And because our politicians are just quiet about it, and the media is quiet, people don't see that there's a danger. So you get people like us running around, you know, squawking and saying, look, this is a dangerous thing. And people are complacent or asleep because they don't see the politicians talking about it or the mainstream media or anything, right? But it's happening.
So is it all of Vancouver? So if I live in Greater Vancouver, it's every house, everything.
It's not only Vancouver. Vancouver has now let the public know that what they're doing. Now, remember, British Columbia was ratified in 2019. We're under this whole UNDRIP scenario, and they can act on it anytime they want. It's usually when I first started to read about UNDRIP and things that were going on, I figured, okay, it's part of their toolbox. It is part of what one of the things that they can do. And if it is implemented, it's I would say it's when extreme hardship starts to come about for everybody, which makes it easy for them to employ.
It's socialism. They're just going to redistribute, and none of us own squat, and we're all going to be put in cities.
That's exactly. Except for though, honestly, I do believe that there are some things coming that will give, especially the awake community and people who are need to run. I don't know how to explain it, but I believe there will be places for people to live in relative safety.
Now, what about the mayor? The mainstream news article made it sound like, will he move forward with this? So does he have the power to not move forward with this for 4 years?
I don't think so. I think that there's an agenda. I think that the people who are voted in, especially concerning politics in different levels, and I've been involved with people who are trying to enter federal politics and provincial politics, you do not really get in unless you, and that's why the CCP, I'm sure some of the people got in, like Ron, he probably got in, but it's not who votes, who counts the votes and how they divvy all that information up. I think, like, look at the 20, you know, what happened in the States. I don't believe half of what I hear.
You know? Yeah, that's exactly it. And you got to be careful of the smoke screens that the political class do. Like, you're talking about the mayor cleaning up the city and all these different things. Now, that might be the case that he might be doing that as he comes in here. But will you be hearing about this story in the background? And so it's like a sleight of hand, like a magician, you know, they'll be saying, you know, okay, we're going to be cleaning up all the streets and all the news is talking about it. And all the eyeballs are there. Meanwhile, in the background, from what I read here, that this document here that we're reading is just basically all proposal, right? It's not, it hasn't been fully enacted yet that I can see, but this new mayor and council, they're the ones who are going to be fully implementing it from what I can see, but I could be wrong on that. But
when it says Mayor Kennedy, the corrupt liberal that just got voted out, sign something, does that not mean much? Does that just mean intention or?
No, well, this whole thing has been ratified as far as a plan.
Here's an example of what happens on reserves. They need an initiative to go through. Chief gets, I don't know, $1 million put in his back pocket, and then he starts, you know, pushing the agenda. It's, to me, in a lot of ways, it's all about who you can dupe, how much money you can put into their hands, and they go willingly.
Yeah,
I hate to say that, but it's a scary thing.
Unless it's a miracle that's going to happen for Vancouver, I'd say 100% that this new mayor and council are going to implement this.
And I for me, it's like, what? Who do we put pressure on? Who do we let know what's coming? I've spoken to, I remember there were four intellectuals that met with me and we were talking about UNDRIP. And before the end of the conversation, they were walking away going, not just figuratively, you know, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this, because it hits home for them. So they don't want to deal with it. It's such
it's mind blowing. Yeah,
it's so mind blowing.
Well, I mean, then not very many people are awake. We're talking about this. So maybe the 10% of us that fully understand what this means, maybe we should sell our homes quickly, even if it's not for the exact dollar we hoped, because everything's dropped 30%.
Oh, it hasn't?
We were looking, like, right now we're in the process of moving my shop to a warehouse and my home. We're you know, at the end of the month, we have nothing. But I forgot my point.
Should I sell right now and before it's too late?
Well, what's happening in banking right now? I had a real estate agent. We were looking at a home. He said, right now, I just want to rent, but I have to rent this home for $3,000. And I said, what? He says, look, The house was worth $1 million. Right now we're selling it for $800,000. And I've gone to a few homes where it's all the same story. So the bubble is starting to burst. Mm-hmm. And this real estate agent says, I've got four or five homes and I cannot pay my mortgage for them. So basically, for you renting this place at $3,000 a month, you're just covering my mortgage.
Yeah.
Like what? And of course, interest rates are going up. And the real estate market is just ready to drop. So to sell now would probably be one of the smartest things, because then you've got money in your pocket, because you're not going to have that money in your pocket in a few months.
A few months? What do you mean?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, right? I talked to certain real estate people saying we're just trying to sell all our stuff, and the other group is trying to rent their homes so they can pay for their mortgages. I don't know.
Wait, my take on this is that imagine what's going to happen to the real estate market, let's say in Vancouver. Instead of all of Canada, it's good that we can localize it to one city and then people can kind of wrap their brain around it more so.
Yeah, except it's my city, Ron.
Well, I know.
I own one thing and that's my townhouse. And I
know, and it's happening in Vancouver. So we can, you know, but the thing is that imagine what's going to happen to the property values in Vancouver when it's realized that all of a sudden now that the owners of the land are these three bands. You know, what's going to happen?
Who's going to buy it from you? It's worth nothing.
Yeah, who wants to buy it? I don't want to give financial advice or anything, but I think the thing to do is to a property like that, if that was me, I'd sell that property and I would buy and get set up in a place, because it's going to be all of us, you know, get set up in a place in the country. That's the whole thing to pick and everything. But anyhow, and then just get set up to survive because
if they want their land, they're going to come and get it from you too, out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they can, if it's their, you know, they might be able to, yes. And I think we're all going to face that. But the thing of it is that until they do that, at least you'll have a place to be able to survive. You know what I'm saying? Like you'll have a garden and you'll be able to, barter with your neighbors, and you're going to have more freedom in the country than you would the city. The cities are not a very good place to be.
I have to totally agree with Ron, because it's about getting people together. These are the things that I work with in Prepare and Survive with many different groups, is they're getting lands where they can survive and self-sustain together. And I know we've been talking about this for almost 2 years now, and that's probably the best option. There are other things coming down the pike that we're working on, but to self-sustain, get out of town, get people together that are of the same heart and mind and work together, and sustaining not only food, but manufacturing and things you can do to be able to, you know, survive technically.
It is difficult, though. I've been down this route before of having a group of people work together on a single piece of land. I think there's a reason why we have fences and we have our own homes with doors and all that kind of stuff, because we, you know, we end up at each other's throats after a while, you know, unless you can marry the people that are going to be working with you. But having said that, you know, I think it's going to be where people are going to be in desperate straits who will come onto your, you know, area and live with you. But the thing is that it's much easier if you have a person, you know, as far as a title owner or owner of the land, I guess, as far as, you know, in the jurisdiction that we're dealing with now, to call the shots, right? Okay, you're coming on my land. These are the rules. This is how we get along. Because if you don't, if you're just a group of people coming together, you're always going to have, you know, the alpha males trying to get to the top, or and people bickering and fighting about things. The point is, though, is Vancouver, you know, is definitely on the radar right now. I mean, to get out of your money out of Vancouver is a good thing, I would think.
Go ahead. I agree. I mean, and it's like it's really important, I feel, for people to get together, start pods, start to be able to, and if things start rolling in a really bad way, we need to have connections with people to be able to work together.
Sorry, if Norb is still here, before I was going to let both of you go, if you're done talking about everything, I don't know, was I just want to make sure before we leave, I want people to know that at liberty.com/Odessa, on this description, this episode will be pinned to the top. I am going to put access to Ron's videos, like the 8-minute one and all of that, and the documents. But Joshua, you're actually going to be teaching a workshop, coincidentally through Liberty, in a couple of weeks. I'm bringing you back on so people know what it's about. But if Norb is still here, he has somebody coming on to teach, I think it's prior to yours, Josh, tell me if I'm wrong, how to get land together and to deke out. Is Norb still here? No. So I will.
Yes, I'm here.
I'll be giving links for people to sign up for that too, off grid. And when is that one? What's the date? Do you know?
It's next Sunday, the 20th, right after the worldwide rally on the 20th.
Okay. Can people register now if they're just interested?
Yeah, actually, this is the website right now to reserve your tickets for that that live virtual workshop.
Okay, with an expert who went and did it. I saw he said it was a bunch of broke guys and they went and they did it.
Hmm. Well,
yeah, a couple of broke guys. They've got indigenous heritage and they've got 160-acre retreat and community that they're developing out in southern Okanagan. Yeah, it's a really great story. We spent a weekend there with them.
And then Josh, you're going to teach prepping when? What date?
On the 26th, I'll be on Liberty Learn. Okay. I'll be talking about emergency evacuation bags. I'll be going over the materials that are in the bag, but I'll also be talking about what people should be doing right now and how they need to get together, working for a bugging in scenario, bugging out. We're also with a very important group of people working on a very similar thing, where being indigenous, that we have the rights to certain land bases here to be able to start very similarly. We've been working on this for almost 2 years, but having ratification from specific bodies that will make sure that the deed title will be ours. Those things are very important, because you'll be roller coastered, or pardon me, flattened by whatever body feels that it is in control, but technically they're not. They just have the military and police power to create problems, and that's my hope.
My advice to people is not to freak out. I mean, time is very short with all of this, but don't make irrational moves and just all of a sudden end up in the middle of nowhere with, no employment or no ability. The further you go away from the city or a town, the more self-sustaining you have to be, because they're going to be doing the CO2 monitoring and everything else like that in the future. And if you're way out in the Tulies, then you have to drive to work and, an hour into the city type of thing. Well, then you're not going to be able to do that. So the further you go out, you better make sure that you can be totally self-sustaining. Otherwise, to be around a city or a town or whatever in the country is a better option, I think.
Good point.
I've done that. I've before landing here, I was going to go way out in the Tulies again, but then really, they're really going to be shutting down this whole issue of CO2 and whatnot. But
you're in Alberta, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Josh, you're here in BC.
Yes.
I'm the one that's at the heart of the beginning of the new world order, right here in Vancouver as a homeowner. Lucky me.
Well, I mean, your property value has gone up quite a bit, even though you're taking a 30% loss. So,
no, it's like I bought it and then it went woo. And I thought, oh, yay. And then now it's back down to what I bought it for. And then if more people find out about what this means with the land, everyone's going to try and be selling. So,
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, the property values all around are going to go down, and you're going to be stuck where you're going to be stuck. And so it's better to right now to find a place to be stuck at.
I agree. I just in my perspective as an Indigenous man is to create something that will allow us to live in relative safety. I just feel that things are going to come together, and that I always believe in hope. I believe in the Creator, and that we win, that we will have things that, because of what we know, we'll be able to put things together that will allow us to live peacefully. I believe that with my whole heart.
Yeah, that's where we're ultimately going. Yeah. But we're going to go through a whole process here.
I know. It's like a lot of people say, oh, the COVID thing. I don't know what is appropriate for me to say, but that, oh, it's over. You know, don't worry so much. No, it's just beginning.
Oh, yeah. When you see all the laws they're trying to rewrite to force us next time to take these injections behind the scenes. A girl who, what's her name again? Maria Z from Red Voice Media. I think it's called Red Voice Media. The same one Stu Peters is on. A doctor came on and said, this is so scary. This entity that's not even legal is basically rewriting our laws right now to say that you have to take a shot by law.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's all coming. So, I mean,
Ron,
definitely, if you're in the cities, you want to be able to try and see if you can. And if you are in the cities, you know, and if you didn't own any land and you don't have money and stuff, what I would do is I would look at RV is not the right word, but a vehicle that you can live in. Because if you have to bug out, and if it's a self-sustaining vehicle, you can drive out of town and you can live in it. You don't have to be knocking on someone's door to be able to survive, right? Have it so it has heat and you have water accessibility with it and tanks and stuff like that. But cheaprvliving.com or Van City Van Life, a guy in Vancouver area. Yeah. He's been living in his van for 4 years. You know me.
Well, it's not as easy for us that have kids.
No, I know.
Gosh, Norb and I say, man, if our kids were already out in university and don't want to hang out with us anymore, we would be living very differently, differently.
No, I know. This is going to be a stressor for all kinds of people. Yeah. And I think my perspective as a Christian guy is that we're being brought into major stress for everyone. Everything is going to be revealed. And we saw that with COVID, right? We saw how people we thought we knew, you know, did a totally different about face on us or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so everything's going to be revealed. It's going to be the final harvest of, you know, like the wheat and the tares kind of a thing. The line's going to be very vivid. And it's all a part of the process that we have to go through. And hopefully we can be on the right side of things, you know.
And I feel sad also for the Indigenous First Nations, because however many years, I don't know how long it'll take, they're going to realize that once again, the government screwed them.
Yeah. But And there's so many people that I know that have passed. It's horrendous. But I think there's going to be a wake up call for not only Indigenous, but what I'm worried about is the hate on that will come to the Indigenous people, and that they will be marked for, you know, harm, and that hurts me.
Well, I thought we spoke about one other time I had you guys on, one of you or both of you. I thought there was a law written that if civil war breaks out over these lands, that's an automatic United Nations comes in, stops the war and takes the land. Isn't there something like that? We talked about that.
Well, they can have boots on the ground. Unfortunately, our militias were supposed to take care of things like that, which was their mandate, but no longer. And of course, we're dealing with
Yeah, I mean, that's an excuse for the UN to come in, you know, like, I mean, I think this is all a play to be able to get civil war happening. People get pretty upset, you know, when they lose their land and their livelihoods and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's a play to be able to create that scenario where people are going to be upset and they're going to start harming people. And then the UN can say, well, it's a genocide, because with the murdered and missing women's commission, you know, that they come up with, they said it's an imperialistic genocide. So already the word genocide is being played, you know, in the whole system here. So anyhow, it's just a multifaceted attack, and it's very well organized. And there's so many people who bought into it on the political level. They either go along to get along, or they've been bought off, or they've been, coerced in some way. And here we are.
And before I go, we're going to be asking for links. When you first sent me the link of the big document,
yeah,
it had expired, and then you had to resend it.
I know.
How do people get to this document then if it expires when I put the link up?
Yeah, that's a funny thing, because if I share that link, it gets expired. I always have to go back to Joshua's message and I get that original link and then I share that again. So I don't know. What I would say is that if the link is there, and if it's active, go ahead and download the document.
So, Joshua, does your link work? It doesn't expire?
No. What I do is I take the link and I save it, and then I send it as a PDF so that there's no connection to where it came from.
Okay, so I think Norb will have to explain to me, but when I do this episode, I don't think I can just put a PDF link in the description. I think I have to do it separately on my... with PDFs at Liberty. I think I have to do it separately. So Norb will let me know. I'll figure it out.
Okay.
Okay.
Ron, I just want to make a comment, Ron.
Yeah.
Ron, you have no idea over the last couple of years how much I appreciate the work you've put in with UNDRIP. I always send people over to you because you've been able to, in a very smart way, put things together for people to understand. So just...
Oh, appreciate that. So thankful. Yeah,
how do they find your videos, Ron? Because you have really great videos. What's your name on YouTube? Just Ron Valent?
Ron Valent, yes. It's Ron Valent.
Okay. And then Joshua, if people want to follow you, it's Indigenous POV.
Yeah, they've taken most of my stuff down on YouTube, but on BitChute, Indigenous POV. And also I'm going to be starting another page, which will probably be talked about when we do our thing on the 26th, so people can find out more information about bugging out, bugging in, the smart things, how to start a intentional community. I've worked with several intentional communities that went belly up just because of one person. So like what Ron says, it can be really amazing or explosive in a bad way. So you need ground rules. You need certain things put together.
Mm-hmm. It's like being married. Like don't bring people into your area that you couldn't, you know, almost be married to, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been there, done it.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming, and keep me up to date, Ron. And Josh, I'll see you like next week for another show.
Thank you for having me.
This is actually an exclusive, a world exclusive, actually. Odessa is right on the ball, and she's got this going out to people now. And you know, the thing is that people in the United States watching this or other countries, they need to realize this is going on behind the scenes. It's all done behind the scenes, and it doesn't show up until it shows up. And go and investigate where you live as well, because this is the big one.
We need everybody running for local city councils all over the world who understand this and won't sign it in.
Yeah. Alberta, there's another page that I sent to you. And Alberta basically is implementing UNDRIP as well. And that has to do with the federal issue because all the provinces are doing it. So.
And speaking of that, everybody keeps saying, Odessa, what about the $500 billion that Chrystia Freeland just borrowed from the states at 3% interest? Is this true?
And many people have sent me articles and the videos. To be honest, we don't know if this is actually
true
for real. So, you know,
it's hearsay. Yeah. I mean, something like that, I just file it in the back and I say, well, let's see for more evidence. But I can see it in one sense, because if they were to go and borrow from their traditional way through the Bank of Canada or the IMF or however they were doing it, it would be seen. Whereas if they do it under the table like this, then it's not seen. So who knows? But basically, they're bankrupting Canada on purpose so that the IMF can come in and they'll say, oh, that's okay, we'll handle it all, we'll deal with all the particulars, but you'll owe nothing now. You know, especially if you owe money on your property. This is a huge get out of mortgages and loans and stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I do owe money.
Okay, so what would happen if let's say there is a big collapse or whatever, then all of a sudden all the banks are going to go up to you or, you know, and to people and say, look, you got to pay us now because we're...
Yeah, they'll call your loans in.
They'll call your loan, and if you can't pay it up, they'll just take it. So
even the amount I put in, so let's say it's a $1 million place. Mine isn't, it's less, but let's say it's $1 million place. I put 500 grand in and then I have a $500,000 mortgage. Yeah. If I can't pay off that mortgage in an instant, do I not even get my first 500 grand back that I put into it?
No, it's bye-bye.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, serious.
Yeah, oh, and remember, you are not the deed holder. You don't hold a deed. You just have a registration of certification. That's it.
Yeah, no, that it's like anything. If you paid your car off almost, you know, 90%, and all of a sudden you can't pay it, they'll take the car.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you don't get any money back for it.
Yeah. Great. So I guess I'm selling.
Oh, we're saving your butt. Hey, Harvey. Odessa.
So you're saying to sell, both of you.
I would not be holding a mortgage in this time.
No.
Absolutely not. Or any debt, because that's when they want to bankrupt the entire system. And when they do, they're going to come in and say, okay, that's it. Okay, where do you owe? And if you own your property and you don't owe any money on it, then it's a lot harder for them to grab it.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
See, I knew this back in the 80s because there was an IMF insider. They forget his name right now, but I mean, he talked about how they're going to have the entire world basically get in so far. That's why these governments can never balance their budgets. It's all intentional to bring us to a point of bankruptcy, and then they collapse everything and then they consolidate everything.
Also remember that when the IMF or when the country is taking a loan, they have what's called parked land, P-A-R-C, which is the same word as P-A-R-K. That means if they get an X amount of million dollar loan, they put up land to cover as collateral. They've been doing this for a long time. That's why PARC. So they park more land so that will cover for the loan.
Yeah, actually the Jonathan May, he was the whistleblower, and like, you know, back in the 80s there was no internet, you know, so it's on cassette tapes and stuff. Information or books, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other one is Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yes.
That's, you know, so it's all a plan. It's you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, for anybody not watching this episode, I really, really, really recommend you go back to my most recent episode before this at liberty.com/Odessa. And it's all about how they're doing this, how they're bringing this into the local level, how they're bribing people. And a lot of our politicians really think, oh, this is to save the planet. No, it's not. They don't look at everything. They're just like dumb politicians, a lot of them.
You have to realize a lot of people that are involved with the whole UNDRIP scenario, the UN, are good people. They have no idea what the actual reality is. So you'll get people saying, look, I work for them. What are you talking about? They don't know. It's like the left hand doesn't want to know what the right hand is doing so they can implement their evil
plan. Yeah, and they don't know that UN is actually Rockefeller and UN is actually the Club of Rome. And my last episode shows that. It's not, there's no lovey-dovey United Nations. Let's all get together These are the most corrupt, vile, genocidal, horrible human beings on the planet.
And it's also interesting to note how they're doing, because Remember, we were talking about how there was the bill there in 2019 about UNDRIP that got shot down. So that was on a federal level. So then, okay, it didn't work on a federal level. So then John Horgan goes ahead and puts it on a provincial level, right? And now you got Vancouver doing it on a municipal level. All of their UN Agenda 2030 different things that they're trying to implement are being brought in on these different levels.
Local
levels and provincial and county levels, everything. And so it's very hard to stop, you know?
Yep. And my last video shows exactly how they're doing that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll have to watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, guys. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions, but this was not real estate advice.
No, it's not real estate advice at all.
And, no.
But yeah.
Thanks a lot, Odessa, for having us on. And it was really nice meeting you, Ron.
Yeah. Yeah. You too. Yeah. It's, you know, the thing is that, I lost my train of thought. That's what it was. It's kind of a convoluted show here that we've done, and it's not really very so concise, but you know, we've kind of covered some basic things and people have to go and investigate themselves. But basically this is it's a real thing happening, and now it's being fully exposed by their document.
Yeah, my last statement would be, folks, this is something that you need to look into. It's very dangerous, and it's coming to a township near you.
Yeah, to your neighborhood soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody go to Ron Valent on YouTube if you want the direct, concise, organized, less of a party, more of right to the point. You can go there and look at his videos.
Oh, okay. All right. But well, thanks, Odessa, for doing that. Excellent work.
Okay, thanks guys. I'm going to say bye to everybody now.
Okay, bye.
Bye.